Welcome to Conflict Coach with Dr. Emily Taylor. I'm a mediator, developmental psychologist, conflict resolution teacher, and mom of five. And just like you, I've had my fair share of conflict. Over time, I've realized conflict isn't something to fear. It's simply part of life. What matters is how we respond and if we have the tools to handle it with confidence and care. And that's what this podcast is all about. In each episode, you'll hear me coach someone through a real conflict they're facing. You'll listen as they share their story, and I'll guide them towards solutions that align with their goals and values. Along the way, I'll point out skills and strategies you can use in your own life, whether at work, at home, or in your other relationships. So whether you've been with us since season one, or you're brand new, welcome. I'm glad you're here. Let's jump in. Today, I'm coaching Vicky. She has a conflict that will feel familiar to anyone who has been a leader in a volunteer organization, like a PTA or neighborhood board, where passionate people with different communication and leadership styles all try to do good things together. Conflict is inevitable in these situations, and it's in working through our differences that the real growth and progress happens. The problem is when we allow conflict to go unchecked, and the friction of disagreement turns into anger and contempt, Vicky is on the edge of that shift right now. The volunteer organization, in her case, is her church congregation, where all the work is done by volunteers. Vicky leads the women's organization and must work closely with another volunteer leader who oversees the entire congregation and its programs. She is really invested in the work they're doing, but she's grown frustrated with this leader's approach. As Vicky and I work through this today, we're going to put into practice every basic conflict management skill we've learned on this podcast. Oh, Vicky, it's so good to have you here today. Thank you.
I'm excited and kind of a little nervous, but I've been looking forward to this all week.
What brought you here today?
This has been on my mind a lot lately. So I serve as a leader in my religious congregation, and the head leader of our group, I've just really been struggling with lately. About a week ago, things kind of really came to a head to the point where I was thinking, like, I don't know if I want to continue in my leadership role, or maybe I should go find a new congregation to go to, or just kind of like, how do I get out of this relationship?
Wow, so pretty significant interchange. Do you mind describing to me briefly what happened, you know, a week ago or so?
The biggest thing that was just like the straw that broke the camel's back was my daughter was attending a youth event, and it was teenagers, boys and girls, and one of the boys slapped her in the face. And I was really bothered by the lack of response from our head religious leader. Even though he oversees the whole youth program, and he didn't do anything. And he was there. And instead it was the women leaders that intervened and tried to solve the problem. My husband, you know, my daughter texted him, said, here's what happened. So my husband went and talked to this gentleman, kind of said, here's what I understand happened. And I think I need to go over and talk to this boy's parents, you know, make sure that there's a resolution to this and they understand that this is a serious problem. And the religious leader never asked how my daughter was. And instead, I felt like he was pretty dismissive of what I thought was the core issue of, you know, the leadership stepping in and making sure that this is a safe space for not just a child, but girls and women in particular. So I just was expecting more as the leader to set the tone.
Okay.
To say, like, we can't treat people this way. We especially can't treat children this way. We can't treat women this way. And the men in this community have your back. And when this happens, we're going to rally around you and we're going to say, I'm so sorry this happened. Are you okay? And then they're going to say, we're going to address this immediate particular incident, and we're going to make sure it's, you know, remedied as much as possible. And then we're going to make sure it never happens again, you know? And I just, like, it just didn't even happen.
Okay, friends, before we continue, I want to pause and note that the incident she's describing needed to be addressed appropriately by the leaders in the congregation, and it has been. Vicky feels her daughter is safe. Consequences and boundaries have been put in place. Moving beyond that, though, you've heard me coach people over and over again to identify what their conflict is really about. Conflicts can ebb and flow. There can be flashpoints, ceasefires, and stalemates. It's important not to mistake any of those periods within the conflict for the conflict itself. Don't let how you feel during a flashpoint or a period of détente drive your entire response to the conflict. Get yourself to a place where you feel safe, both physically and psychologically. Give your emotions a chance to regulate and do some work to identify the core of the conflict. What is the story you're telling about the conflict? What does the story leave out? What are your needs in the conflict? What would it look like for your needs to be met? That's where I'm headed next with Vicky in this conflict with her leader, who we're just going to call John from now on. It's a pseudonym. Let's listen. Do you mind filling me in on any other kind of memories or incidents that you think led up to this frustration with him in particular?
One of the more obvious is, you know, I was, it's kind of fourth quarter and I wonder how much money I have left in my budget so I can be very purposeful with how I spend the budget that I'm a steward over. So I looked at my budget, I made plans, and then we had a meeting, you know, big committee meeting, and he had printed out pages that he handed everyone, all the other leaders. Here's your budgets. And I look at it, and it was significantly smaller than what I had just looked up like 3 days before. And my husband helps our church with the finances, and so I came home and was like, I don't understand, because he even helped me figure out the budget earlier that week. And he was like, oh, you're right. Like, and he remembered some meetings he'd been in where John was talking about how they'd overspent in other areas. And so they just took money from everyone else, but he didn't tell anyone. So it really lost a lot of trust from me. It just felt really sneaky, like, oh, no one's going to notice, you know. And that bothered me because I'm open. Like, if he would have come to me, if John had said, you know, this other group really needs a little more money and, you know, do you really need this money? I would have said, I had some great ideas. But that sounds really important. You know what? Like, by all means, please take it. So it's just a simple conversation, some transparency in the communication. But instead, it felt like he was just trying to, like, pull a fast one on everyone, take some money that others were, like, entitled to.
And then, so the impact on you is what?
Lack of trust.
Okay.
So, yeah, you know, I had this really difficult situation where this member of our congregation, there was just a lot of evidence of child neglect. I've lived by this person for 15 years. So I've seen things for years, but it really, because this leadership role was new for me, and now I felt like I had some stewardship. I was kind of like, what can you do? And everyone's always like, I don't know what you can do because it sounds like there's some major issues. And then everyone's like, well, if the issues are as serious as you're saying or thinking, then we need to call the authorities. And yes. Then the conversation goes to, well, everyone's already called the authorities and clearly nothing's been done. So I guess no one cares. So then what can you do?
Sure.
So we're in this like loop. And I'm like, you know what? Now that it's on my watch, like I can't just let this go. We got to make sure we advocate for these kids. So, long story short. The kids have been removed by DCFS.
But you help facilitate that?
Yes.
Okay.
And obviously, like, our church leader, John, was in the passenger seat, the back seat.
Okay. You know, so you took that on. Was he obstructive or just not involved?
No, it was just not involved.
Okay.
You know, and so it just kind of felt like it was a heavy burden. I cried about it a lot.
And you felt like that was just on you.
Yeah. It feels lonely, too. Yeah. I think that's part of it. I think being in a position where you feel like you're getting people in trouble and you're disrupting, like, families, that's scary and painful, too. And so I think the loneliness of just, like, kind of thought we'd be in this together.
It sounds like you really value having people to counsel with.
Yes.
Yeah. So counseling, and that your expectation, especially in this leadership role, is that with fellow leaders, particularly the head person over a congregation, that you would counsel together.
Yes.
Okay.
And I'm always, it's like fatigue of being like, am I the only one who sees it? Or am I the only one who cares? And then when I do bring stuff up, I leave feeling like, here we go again. There's Vicky. You know, always has something to complain about type of a thing. And that's hard.
All right, friends. So now we're getting into the story Vicky is telling herself about this conflict. She feels like her fellow leader, John, isn't pulling his weight, but also feels like when she steps in, she's being seen as a complainer. Whether that story is true or not, it drives her behavior. That's how powerful these stories we tell ourselves are. So you need to know what that story is. Say it out loud. Write it down. One interesting element of Vicky's story I want to point out here is what's called obliger fatigue. If you're someone like Vicky, or me, who's inclined to accommodate other people's needs, you're prone to obliger fatigue. It's a predictable burnout pattern that arises when you consistently say yes to others without saying yes to yourself. If you're an obliger experiencing burnout, it might be limiting your ability to see the full range of options you have for addressing the conflict. And that's where I'm headed next with Vicky. We've established her complaints with how things are going. Now we're going to flip those complaints into clear statements of need, which is another skill we've learned about on the podcast. So these are like, it's always helpful to think of these are the gaps. Like we've been identifying them kind of one by one.
Yeah.
If we're going to flip them to what you need in this situation to not resign, to not like throw in the towel.
Yeah.
I heard lonely, a desire to counsel together. You had explained that you would like the person who's doing the job to not just get the perks of it, but have the balance of responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
So each person is kind of pulling their weight. Is that one way to say
it? Yeah, it doesn't feel like the middle manager should be the one who's always saying, hey, are we going to talk about this?
Yeah, like you don't like having to be driving the issue every time.
Yeah, I don't mind doing work. Like, probably I'm going to do it no matter what, but I guess part of it is, like, I don't want to feel bad or guilty or second-guess myself for the things that I am doing and the things that I speak up and advocate for.
Okay.
And the things that I think are right. And I leave a lot of committee meetings or interactions with John feeling like, here you are, the complainer. Like, I, like, go home and think about, should I have not brought that up? Should I? And I don't think I'm perfect at how I bring stuff up, but I also don't think that I'm doing it in a way, you know, some people like, you have the right info, but the delivery is so bad that you're like, girl, like.
But you're self-aware enough to know that you're
you know, I'm trying not to just be that brat.
So is that a sense of confidence or that you like some kind of satisfaction that you are doing the right thing? Like, or validation?
Maybe validation. Maybe it's even just, I want to be taken seriously.
Okay. If someone was really supporting you and not just patronizing you, what would it look like?
Well, I'm a brainstormer. I'm an innovator. Like, I just want to talk about, what do you think?
Okay,
could
so you
fix
need some
this?
Collaborative conversation?
Yeah.
Okay.
So show me you care and that you have a brain. That's rude. Okay, sorry.
Okay.
Show me that you care and that you're thinking about this problem and ways of finding a solution.
Okay, so this is actually so important, what you just said. Show me you care. So we're going to move into John.
Okay.
I want you to tell me a little bit about what you think John's concerns are in your relationship. John is a complex character, I'm sure, but we're going to thinking about him in terms of you, Right. What do you think is going on in John's head right now?
I've thought about this a lot, especially in trying to give him grace.
Sure.
I think John's primary motivator is avoiding conflict. So I think that John doesn't want to do hard things that bring him face to face with uncomfortable situations.
And from your perspective, the head person is generally the one that's going to have to deal with yes. most conflict. That's just kind of the nature of the role.
Yeah, and I also don't think he's like owned the role as much as is normal or typical. So a lot of others I've seen in this role, like, they just put in a lot more time. I think that things are slipping through the cracks. I don't think he knows the extent to what he's not doing well or not doing, you know.
Okay.
I just think there's not as much insight I would expect.
Does he have any concerns in working with you, or is this just your side?
I think he has no idea how much I do not trust him. And that lack of trust has been bubbling over to the point where it's turning into just actual dislike. He has no idea, because I try to be kind. And you know what? There's things I should have told him.
What should you have told him?
I should have told him that I didn't like how you handled the budget thing, and I lost trust about that. And
okay.
I haven't, you know, I would have liked to see more ownership and more direction from you and counsel from you with this difficult situation with the family and our congregation.
Okay.
And I know that about myself. Like, I can speak up and be assertive in a committee meeting, especially because it means I'm advocating for other people. But, like, me coming to you and saying, you know, something's been bothering me, like, there's a 85% chance it's not going to happen until, like, it really has to happen. And then even then, I'm probably going to avoid it, right? So I actually was struggling with some stuff with John, with another female leader. And she's like, I talked to John's supervisor, and it was really helpful. And I think you should talk to John's supervisor. And I was like, I don't know him well enough. Like, I feel like I'm just complaining. I don't want to be that person. So she's like, well, I'm going to tell John's supervisor to call you. I'm like, well, that could be good, but I'm not going to tell you to do that. I'm so virtuous. I don't want to complain about
oh,
him.
Oh, that's interesting. You just said that. Did you notice? Is it more virtuous to let it go?
Well, no. I know that, but it does feel like, you know, like the martyr falling on your sword, like just dealing with it. But the virtuous comment, though, is more like just not complaining to his boss, you know, like stirring up trouble and gossip and, you know.
Yeah.
But it's like, but yeah, if he wants to call me because you told him to, then like, fine, okay, you know. So John's supervisor called me before the slap. And I was like a mutineer. Like, I went into that conversation like wanting to be like, here's all the reasons why you got to fire this guy, you know.
Yeah.
And he's so great. That obviously that didn't gain much traction, but he wasn't dismissive of me. Like, he
okay.
validated me, but it was kind of like
okay.
we shifted focus to, instead of like crying mutiny, you're in this role for a reason, and your strengths, even though it's hard and it's uncomfortable and you feel like the bad guy a lot of time, like, you can help John learn how to be better.
Hmm.
So I was like, okay, fine.
Okay, what'd you think about that?
And I was like, I don't like it, but okay, fine. So
okay.
I had committed to myself that, okay, the next time I have like a monthly scheduled meeting with just John and I.
Okay.
So I was like, okay, my next meeting, I'm going to bring up some of the stuff that's really been eating at me and causing our relationship to not be in a good spot. So I was already ready to do that. And then the slap happened, not even probably a week after that.
So just in terms of brainstorming, so say you are going to have, like, I'm hoping you won't just not have the conversation, but planning for this conversation you're going to have with him,
mm-hmm.
what are the needs, what are the ones that you want to share with him that you think he might even be able to understand if you explained yourself?
I guess a lot of it comes down to just, again, that, like, you're the head boss, you're the head guy. And I want to feel like he is.
Your need, as opposed to what you think he should be doing, like, how could you articulate that? Is like, is it I need support? Is it I need to be able to counsel about these situations? And for me, counseling looks like X. I'm guessing it's like a lack of skill.
Yes. That's what it is. He's a genuinely nice guy, and I know that he wants to do a good job, but yeah, lack of skill is a good summary. So I think what you said was good, of here's the way I would like to be validated.
Okay.
You know, when I bring things up.
I know this sounds silly, and I'm going to give you one more aside. Like, when I was very early married, and my husband originally was an engineer, kind of like fits some of the stereotypes. He's very much more savvy now. But I remember I was like, I need to talk about this. And he goes, well, just talk. And I said, that's not really how it works for me. And so what was interesting is, again, like very nuts and boltsy, I had to say, I see a conversation more like a tennis match. I lob the ball you, and you lob it back. And when you lob it back, that's a thoughtful follow-up question. Mm-hmm. That's a comment of your own about the situation. And it seemed so basic is probably not the right word, but I thought it was just like with girlfriends, it just seemed like it was natural. Yeah. And so then I'm in the situation, I'm like, am I really having to explain this? But if I do it in a way that's not patronizing and he actually responds, good on both of us, right? Like, so imagine you're coaching John about what you need and that your needs matter. Is it counsel? Is it feedback? Is it working together? Like, if you're going to approach the most important thing with him, because you can't barrage him with everything at once, right?
Yeah, I've thought about that too. It's not fair to be like, I've been saving up a year and a half worth of complaints that I didn't have the courage to tell you.
Yeah.
I'm going to backtrack.
Yeah, no worries.
Maybe
at all.
The core of the issue is like just I don't trust him.
So the issue is you don't trust. So then the goal or like shifting it is, okay, how can I build trust with this person? Yeah. Imagine you're sitting down with him and there's one thing that he could do. Like, I don't mean to be too didactic, but so I think of trust is like, usually it's not like I don't trust you with anything and I trust you with everything.
Right.
We have relationships along the whole spectrum. But I actually, again, I'm a kind of a scientist a little bit. Like, I like to experiment. So I give someone a small test with something that's not like my dearest thing to see if they can do it. But I have to make sure I set this experiment up right. Mm-hmm. And I'm explicit enough to say, hey, I've struggled to trust our interactions because there's been several times where I've been disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
I want to work on building up trust with you. And I wondered if this is like one piece that we could work on. Does that make sense?
I'd had the thought, you can't just come in and just steamroll him with everything. I'd kind of settled on like the one thing that I want to start with is this committee asking kind of process.
Okay, just a quick clarification. In Vicky's congregation, all the leadership roles are staffed by volunteers who are usually assigned by the leader in John's position. Vicky's frustrated with how John handles those assignments, either because they aren't filled quickly enough or with the person she'd hoped for. So she thinks this process could be a good starting place in communicating a need to John. The question is, how? Well, this is where nonviolent communication comes in. And this should sound familiar. It's another core conflict skill. So nonviolent communication, the teaching is I make an observation.
Okay.
So you're going to pick the one thing. Say you're just doing asking for volunteers for people in your organization. Like, I have observed it's been a lengthy process. Some of the communication has been a little bit confusing. I haven't even known if the person actually did say yes or no. And then you add a feeling. I've been frustrated because I can't get my organization staffed.
Yes.
My need is to get my organization staffed properly. And then the request is at the end. So there's an observation formally stating your need. It's not, I feel angry. It's like, I'm frustrated or I'm concerned. And then you add it with a need because I need to keep these organizations staffed. Otherwise, I end up doing the work. So next time I ask for someone, I'd like to hear from you within whatever X amount of days. And, you know, if that doesn't work, please let me know what's going to work for you, because I would like to be able to follow up with you. Does that make sense? Like, what?
Love that.
So
that's powerful. I can do that.
Yeah.
What, I can do that.
I know. I can tell. I can see from your face. So again, it's an observation, a feeling that you have about the situation, a need, and then a specific request. And that means it's actionable, concrete. You want him to be able to know exactly what you're talking about and to be able to say yes. You don't want to ask him to do something that's beyond his capacity.
Right.
The only other scripture I want to quote is, be as wise as serpents, as harmless as doves. Wise meaning, I know what this guy is like. I know what his strengths and weaknesses are, and I'm going to frame what I want in terms of what he can deliver. That's a really pragmatic approach, but
I like that. I'm not familiar with that one, and that resonates with me a lot. Because I also think I have like a brain where I recognize things, and then I feel bad about like being the complainer, being the one.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean you have to do it in a mean or, you know, aggressively.
Yeah. Brené Brown says, clear is kind, because then you know what you're dealing with, right?
That's so true, because it's also not kind of me to have all these negative feelings and mutiny, and, you know, he has no idea. Yeah, I haven't even given him the chance to try to fix it, and I do feel bad that if he knew I felt this way, I think he would cry.
He might cry, and then, but he might be like, I have no idea what to do.
That's too.
Right?
I think the skill set, you know, it just doesn't have all the tools in the toolbox.
I'm sensing you feel comfortable having that conversation.
That's the wrong word.
You feel
committed.
Committed.
I feel committed to the conversation. Comfortable? No.
Okay.
But I like that formula of how to address it, and I think with some thought that I can.
Yeah.
Can do it.
Thank you so much, Vicki, for coming on the show. I appreciate it.
Wow. This is super helpful.
Thanks. Okay, friends. What a great overview of the conflict fundamentals we've learned throughout the season. And I'm so grateful to Vicki for being willing to explore her conflict with us. It's vulnerable to voice your toughest feelings about a person and then be willing to pivot and humbly search for a way forward. So let's quickly run through the skills we touched on today that are applicable to any conflict. First, don't mistake the flashpoint for the main problem. While it is tempting to try and solve everything in the moments after the last straw breaks the camel's back, it is important to take a step back and acknowledge the tensions and events that led to the flashpoint. Before trying to solve things, make sure you're addressing the whole issue and not just the events that boiled everything over. Second, recognize the story you tell yourself. This is tricky, but it is important to think about the conflict you're in and how you perceive yourself in it. Are you making yourself the victim? Do you feel that people exploit your good nature? These things may be true, but you may see yourself differently after deep thought or talks with a loved one. Having clarity on what the story is will help you recognize what your needs are and then know how to proceed to truly repair a damaged relationship. The third skill is turn your complaints into needs. Write out a comprehensive list of your complaints about the other person or situation. Get it all out. And then turn each of those statements into a need. So a complaint like, I have to pick up the slack on important things he's ignoring, might become, I need collaborative conversations where we identify what needs doing and decide together who does what. Once you've identified your needs in a conflict, pick one to address first as you begin the process of repairing the relationship in small steps. And finally, use nonviolent communication. There are four basic steps to nonviolent communication, which helps us express our needs in a way that people can understand. First, we make a concrete observation without adding a judgment. Second, we share a personal feeling related to our observation. Third, we couple a personal need with the feeling we expressed. And fourth, we make a request for change using positive, concrete wording. Find out more about the power of nonviolent communication in the show notes. Thanks for joining me today. If there's someone in your life who might benefit from listening to this episode, please share it. Because as I always say, it's not a question of if, but when we're going to experience conflict, and we do much better when we're prepared. The Conflict Coach with Dr. Emily Taylor is a BYU Radio podcast. I'd love to connect with you on social media. Find me on Facebook and Instagram at Conflict Coach with Dr. Emily, where I'm sharing more ideas for working through conflict. Next time, I'll be finishing the season with a special guest who's got a lifetime of insights about conflict to share. Okay, it's my mom. You're gonna love her. I hope you'll join me.